Eurovision. Welcome to Eurovision, a podcast with a unique Irish perspective on the Eurovision Song Contest.
12 points,
Ireland. Oh, praise for everything.
I think you've probably gathered who's won. They've been in the lead from halfway down the first list.
And gentlemen, as you have seen and heard, we have a result. Ireland are the winners of this year's Eurovision
Song. Dhíobh gach duine, fáilte ar ais to the Eurovision podcast. Hello everyone and welcome back to the Eurovision podcast. My name is Lou.
My name is Connor.
And you're very welcome to this special episode that we're releasing today. We've been busy up until now. We hope everyone enjoyed the quickfire rating season that we had. 12 episodes, everybody scoring, including you, the listeners. So just thanks so much again to everybody for your support and for listening to that. We enjoyed it, didn't we, Connor?
We did. We got there. It flew by, though, this year. I felt last year was a lot more dragged out, but
because we were stressed out of our minds.
True, actually, fair enough.
Last year, we didn't organise ourselves enough. This year, we were like, let's go, spreadsheets, dates, calendar. We had Alex and Micheál lending a great hand. So, yeah. Yeah, it worked. We enjoyed it.
Yes, yeah, it's good. And of course, to hear your opinions, the listeners as well, is great, as always. But it was weird hearing the intro because obviously we haven't had that intro for
it's
a while.
Very long.
Very long, isn't it? That will probably be gone next season, but
let us know what you think of the intro. Yeah. And we will be discussing one of the songs that appeared in the intro. But just before we get really stuck into this special episode, it would be amiss of us not to just mention that rehearsals are going on at the moment. Mm-hmm. First rehearsals, we've seen bits and pieces for semi-final one. Bambi Thug slaying the stage.
Are we surprised though?
No.
It's so funny, like watching all these reactions and like, oh, Ireland's my winner of the day. What have they done since Eurosong? And it's like, lads, I am not surprised. This is what we expected. Like, we know Bambi. Have you not followed Bambi?
Have you not been listening to Eurovision?
Thank you. We have said this from day zero since pre-Eurosong. We could only imagine what they were going to do in Malmo.
Yeah.
And like, they are smashing it left, right and centre.
My favourite thing is when Bambi moves their hand over the candles and they light up.
Yes.
Along with the hand movement. So cool.
Even like, it's so Irish. Mm. Without being Irish, you know, with the fit like
yes, all Celtic symbols. Oh,
so nice.
And the makeup, so good.
Love it. So
that's exciting, guys.
Yes, they are smashing it. And yeah, we're heading back to that final, lads. Like, just get ready. Just get ready to hear Ireland be called. Yeah. I'm saying it. I've said it since Eurosong, for God's sake. We're getting to the final.
We are getting
to the final.
Guys, as we always say, do make sure you're following all our socials because we're trying to go live. We're trying to, you know, chat to everyone. We did a lovely like 90-minute live across most of our socials only yesterday. Thanks to everyone who joined that. We had almost 500 people joining in for that. That's the best time to engage because we hear more from the listeners and followers. It's a bit more informal even than our podcast episodes are. And yeah, it's just a great time to check in with each other and chat, I suppose. If you are as well kind of really looking forward to this Eurovision season, especially if you're a new listener or a newer Eurovision fan, we highly recommend that you look into OJ Ireland, Ireland's Eurovision fan club. There's groups, chats set up if you're going to Malmö, so you can meet up with people in that way. And if you're not heading to Malmö like myself, there is a viewing party happening in Dublin for the grand final Saturday night in the Odeon on Harcourt Street. So highly recommend you hit all of that stuff up so that, you know, you're not alone in following Eurovision 2024. We've got a big thriving community in Ireland now.
You
get involved.
You are not alone.
Not a song I expected on that. You're not alone. We're
oh,
in
no,
this
that's
together.
Horrible. That's horrible. That's
I love
horrible.
That. I love that.
But speaking of people, if you are in Malmo, we are running an event in Malmo on the Sunday night, which is Sunday, May 5th. It is the unofficial, official after party, Turquoise Carpet after party. Sequence and Sips is what it's called. We're running it alongside Alicia Michelle, who you will know. Huge, huge person that we love on the podcast. So much love for them. Also Eurovision Hub, which you know very well, Lou, of course.
And you, Connor.
And me too. Yeah, but that's where
me
you
as a
started.
Reactor, you as an editor, yeah.
True, true. And of course that Eurovision side as well. Friendly old Tim over there, pal of the pod too. So we are running that event. You can get tickets on Eventbrite. If you head over to our socials, you will be able to find all the details there. Early bird tickets are actually sold out at the moment, but there will be cheers, there'll be sequence, there'll be parties, there'll be music, and make sure you get your ticket for that if you have nothing to do on Sunday night, because we want to keep the party going after the mm-hmm. turquoise carpet. So yeah, please
Amazing.
Support us over there if you want to
go, guys.
But yeah, big episode today there, Ludo.
Well, let's get into it,
because we're gonna park Eurovision 2024.
Yeah, we're looking back to 30 years ago, the 30th of April, 1994. Lots of 30s going on here. A very, very special day in Irish history, in Irish music history, and most importantly, Irish Eurovision history, because Ireland hosted the Eurovision Song Contest 1994. Now, as most of you listening probably know, this was aired...
Okay. I found this on the web for because Ireland hosted the Eurovision Song Contest 1994. Check it out.
We're trying to check it out, Siri. We're trying to tell the lead listeners.
That freaks me out so much. I don't know. I don't know if we'll keep that in or not.
I think we will.
Let's just continue. What the hell?
Between my telly listening to us, my computer's listening to us.
At least I was speaking clearly enough for it to understand me.
Siri's just interested. So carry on, Lou.
Siri loves my voice.
How rude though, Siri.
So
anyway,
rude.
Continue,
so rude.
Lou.
Sorry. So Ireland hosted the Eurovision Song Contest in 1994. It was the second time in the 90s that we hosted. It was actually the first time in that decade we hosted it in Dublin, because as many of you know, we hosted it in Mill Street in County Cork the year before. And it was, of course, our third win in a row. In a row. Hat trick. Ireland hat trick in Eurovision. Connor, will that ever be done again?
Never. Never.
Never.
I don't even think back to back could be done nowadays.
It's very
it's
difficult.
So difficult. Mm. But yeah, you know, who was it? I think it was Niamh Kavanagh said it somewhere that, yeah, I think it was actually with us in our interview. She was saying that, yeah, you know, Sweden can have 7 wins and tie with us, but no one will ever have 3 wins back, you know, back to back and like that. So
she's so right.
So right.
So right.
I think that's a record that will hold dear to us.
Well, let's set the scene. 30th of April, 1994, Dublin, the Point Depot or the Point Theatre, as it was later called, whatever you call it, we'll call it the Point. Which is now the Three Arena. For a while it was the O2, as I knew it in my youth. 1994, kind of an interesting time for Ireland to win and host Eurovision when you think of it. Like, the European Union was really expanding. We had the debut of many countries in Eurovision in 1994, such as Estonia, Poland, and many others, you know, largely Eastern European countries joining Eurovision, which, as we know, for the contest, that's been a great thing, expanding it out and getting music from all over the continent. It was also an interesting year in terms of relegation being used, as there were too many countries taking part in Eurovision that year. So they had to kind of whittle it down to a neat 25. So as a result, 7 countries, the lowest placed countries from 1993, were excluded. So Italy and Luxembourg withdrew from the contest voluntarily. And the bottom 5 from Eurovision 1993, Belgium, Denmark, Israel and Slovenia and Turkey, were excluded from the contest that year due to poor result the year before. So yeah, kind of an interesting year, debuting countries, Estonia, Hungary, Lithuania, Poland, Romania, Russia and Slovakia. A lot of very kind of interesting Eurovision countries joining us in Dublin that year. So our hosts, Connor, who were our hosts?
So they were Cynthia Nimiorku, who at the time was the lotto presenter on the national broadcaster RTE. We also had a icon of radio and TV, but more so radio, Gerry Ryan, who of course is no longer with us, unfortunately, but two, you know, big personalities on Irish telly, and no better people really when you go back and watch the contest. You know, they guided us through the night effortlessly.
Yeah.
And they were fantastic. And it was weird. I more noticed a Gerry because, you know, growing up with him on radio, but it was weird to see him in that setting of more serious, suited and booted, where I know him as, like, you know, the big character on the radio with the funny jokes and everything like that. So
yeah, God rest him. He was a great broadcaster.
He really was, and shame to see him no longer with us. But yeah, two, you know, big, huge characters who were so good to guide us through the night. The little banter between them. I remember during the voting system, Gerry forgot what the capital of Finland was or where they were, you know, the satellite was coming from. Because that year was the first time we ever had satellite images of the actual people giving us the votes from all around Europe. So huge, huge, so again, cool. Another huge moment in Eurovision history taking place in 1994. And Gerry was like, yeah, we're over to Finland now and we're going to, and then Cynthia interrupts and goes, Helsinki. And then the audience, you know, typical Irish going, ah, go on, Gerry, you know, laughing away. So it was those little things, you know, that you remember from that contest. But again, two huge characters in Irish production. Cynthia, of course, moved on to different avenues after Eurovision. Teacher, barrister, now running in elections for European Parliament. So it's mad how Eurovision can take you in such a different direction post the contest. But yeah, again, two huge characters of hosts, but also as well, you know, it was a big, big time for, you know, the country itself. You mentioned there with the European Union expanding as well. And of course, you know, Riverdance, that interval act, we've got to mention that.
We have to mention that. I mean, Riverdance is one of those phenomenons that I believe most Irish people are extremely proud of. I mean, we've both grown up in Dublin. I don't know about yourself, Connor, but I definitely spent many a summer's evening in the Gaiety Theatre being brought along to see Riverdance performed in our capital city. I mean, most Irish children, definitely when I was in school, most Irish girls would go to Irish dancing classes. Did you go to Irish dancing classes?
Never. Never.
Did you do the little bit of Rinka in school? Like,
not even that.
You never did a little Kaylee or anything?
Nothing.
And your school was awfully Irish. It was more gas.
I shite that school, but anyway, that's another. I'll say that happily.
More of a gay school.
Yeah, too much gay.
Unfortunately.
Too much gay, not enough gay.
You're like, too much gay. What about the gays and
exactly,
the gals?
Exactly. There's me bopping to Hannah Montana in the back and they're all fucking off with their hurlies and their Gaelic footballs.
Fair enough. But well, it was definitely...
We were brought to Riverdance though once.
Good,
on a school trip. But it was raining, so we couldn't play
It was a huge part of a lot of Irish people's childhood. I'm not speaking for everyone. I suppose I'm speaking on my own experience. But I would have done Irish dancing up to the age of like 11 or so. And... went to the Fechna, the competitions, we call them. And yeah, definitely attended Riverdance a good few times. Like if I had family or friends visiting from abroad over the summertime, it was like a nice thing to do to bring them into the city centre in Dublin to go and see Riverdance. And of course, as we know, Riverdance has, you know, soared across borders and across continents. And it's huge in China and in
I was looking
America.
On their website, the tours that they're doing all around the world, you know, from a 6-minute interval act that it's grown into this huge production and show of great music and great Irish dancing and talent. It's fantastic to see. It's crazy.
It is.
And
it
that
is.
All started from the Eurovision Song Contest.
Well, I didn't know that for ages. And then as I was becoming more of a invested Eurovision fan, when I discovered this, I was enthralled. I was like, yes, another thing I think is amazing, like linked to the thing I love. Like we love to see it. We love to see it. And I mean, excuse me. I definitely think Riverdance is something that people outside of Ireland want to see more of that expression from us in general in Eurovision. And even you might recall last year, a friend of ours, Roy, some people listening might know of him from YouTube and he's from the Netherlands, Eurovision friend of ours. And he was over in Dublin with his family and we met up with them and we did a very Irish thing. We brought him to the Guinness Storehouse with his parents and we had a lovely evening. And we were like thinking where to bring them. And Connor and I said, oh, let's bring them to the church in Dublin City Centre. You know, nice, like decent food, nice setting, but also there's always a bit of Irish dancing on and they just loved it.
Yeah.
Roy was like, this will have made my mom's day to have seen a bit of Irish dancing, you know. And I just think it's so important that we tap into that. I mean, look, sometimes as Irish people, we see the kind of diddly eye and we're like, ah, here we go. But like at the end of the day, it's a huge part of our heritage, our culture. And we should just embrace it, you know, for what it is. Even if sometimes it's a bit kitschy and it's a bit touristy and whatever put on for people. Like, why not lean into it if it's something that other people love about us, you know? So Riverdance is something for sure to be proud of, a cultural phenomenon. And who would have thought that would have come from the music of Bill Whelan, the choreography of Gene Butler and Michael Flatley, who were also the lead dancers. I mean, both in their own right went on to become huge names and huge superstars. Michael Flatley, as we probably know, went on to Lord of the Dance, which became its own kind of phenomenon as well. And yeah, it's a huge landmark, you know, for Irish history. Reeling in the Years 1994 nearly focuses more on Riverdance than Eurovision and Paul and Charlie, which
a lot of people as
later.
Well, like, don't realize that Riverdance is an interval act. A lot of people go, oh, that might be from Eurovision. Oh, they represented us. And it's just like, no, God, no.
We didn't
no.
put 50 dancers
exactly.
on the stage.
And,
am I right in thinking that 50th or was it the 60th anniversary concert, the one Petra and Graham
50th
presented? It was the 50th they had Riverdance.
Which just shows you that, like, an interval act was invited onto...
Yeah.
You know, a Eurovision song contest celebration. It just shows you its impact that it has made. And I don't think any interval act, like, we've had amazing interval acts over the last few years, but none of them would match what Riverdance did and has done after Eurovision. You know, it's fantastic to see it, you know, the success of it. It's crazy. It's crazy. And, like, you will never not meet an Irish person who does not know what Riverdance is.
Yeah.
You know, if you say Riverdance to someone, they'll know exactly what it is, you know.
And I have mortified myself at a few Euro bashes doing Riverdance.
Ah, dead right, though, as you should.
There's a video of me at a recent Euro bash where I was roaring, I think it was Adam or someone doing the male.
Like,
I was
teachers.
Being Gene and he was being Michael. And you can hear me going, it's 2-3, I'm 2-3, switch her right and 1-2-3.
Only the girls, only the girls. No, not yet.
And I was getting so thick. I was like, no. I was like, it's just the girls, then the lads. I was like, wait.
It's actually become like a little bit of a tradition to end the night with Riverdance. It's happened the last two Euro bashes.
It's great.
And then they kind of go into like a remix of of Riverdance. And then that's the end of the night. So it's kind of like the Irish way of ending our evenings. At a Eurovision event support.
Well, this brings us to a portion of the podcast that we've kind of discussed the hosts, we've discussed Riverdance, and this should probably lead into a very interesting chat that we had over the last few days with an extremely interesting person, and we really appreciate her giving us her time. We're going to delve into the songs maybe a little bit later in the episode, but first we have to talk to her, don't we, Connor?
We do, of course. And we had the great honour of chatting to one of the hosts of Eurovision 1994. And that, of course, is the fabulous Cynthia Niumerkou.
Cynthia Niumerkou, a big, big fulcha to the podcast.
Lou agus Conor gramila mahagi bert tha remade am dawanorm of a kind live agus mwide kelura. Is it 30 years since 1994?
Yeah.
How the years go by. What's another year, hey?
like what you did there. Firstly, you know, happy anniversary. It's 30 years, like you said there, since Eurovision came to Dublin and you hosted. We'll kick it off, really. How did you get into your role as one of the hosts? Did you have to audition for it? Were you in the running the previous 2 years that it came to Ireland as well? How did that whole process happen?
Connor, I did have to audition. I was invited to audition by Moya Doherty, who was chosen to be the producer of Eurovision 1994. And that was an extremely exciting opportunity for me to have a go for it. Because, as you say, the previous year, I really wanted to present the Eurovision from Mill Street. And as I recollect, I think I did get an opportunity to screen test for that particular one as well, But I didn't get the gig, and I was very disappointed and very determined that I wasn't going to not get it in 1994.
Cynthia, we can see that you're wearing something very, very special. Those who are viewing this maybe on YouTube will be able to see your lovely necklace. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. I was very friendly with a jeweller in Dublin at the time called Alan Ardiff. I had done some recording work with him for television, and he had featured in a couple of programmes that I've been presenting. And when it was announced that I was to co-present with Gerry Ryan, there was obviously a lot of talk about dress, jewellery, the look, hair, everything to do with the appearance. But one particular thing that I really wanted to showcase was our wonderful craft tradition in Ireland and our craftspersonship. And that person was Alan Ardiff. And luckily, when I suggested to Moya Doherty that we get a bespoke signature piece made for me to wear, she agreed. And this is the same said piece, which I wear so proudly, so, so proudly today for you and on special occasions.
And no better special occasion than 30 years, of course. And it is a beautiful piece. Tell us about your styling on the night then. Obviously, you have your beautiful signature piece, but what else went into the kind of wardrobe side of things for the night? Because you had a few costume changes.
Yeah, Connor, it was busy with the costumes. So I also suggested to Moya, or indeed perhaps she had come up with the name as well, but Jen Kelly was a lead designer in Dublin City at the time. And Jen Kelly, I also knew, and I'd also purchased some nice clothing for studio wear and so forth in RTE from him. And so Jen Kelly was chosen, thankfully, as the designer. And there were a lot of meetings and fittings and looking at colours and considering styles and so forth. And Jen did a magnificent job on the two dresses. Funnily enough, the first dress, which was extremely light and ephemeral and beautiful slits in it to show myself and Gerry when we were descending from the roof of the Point Depot. And when we stepped off, you could see wonderful flow and movement in the dress. And obviously my two legs striding out to get to the main podium. And it moved very well, the dress. And it fitted very well on top with a beautiful dusty sort of shimmery gold brown sequined top, but not too many sequins. So it was a stunning dress, absolutely stunning. And the second dress was very, very different. It was for a more, I suppose, standing position at the voting section of the programme. And it was very much in the theme of what we now know is Barbie, that big hit movie, because it was all pink. And it was in small pleats all the way down from the bodice, which was beautifully fitted, with full length sleeves, and also pleated all the way down on the skirt. And it actually came out somewhat like a Barbie doll's dress.
We're getting a real insight here into the styling. And of course, a lot of preparation must have gone in for those things and for the show in general. Connor and myself, we are unfortunately living post and Ireland having glory in Eurovision Day. So we're dying to know on a personal level, but I'm sure our listeners also, from your perspective as one of the hosts, what was the preparation like for a Eurovision in Dublin, in the Point? Can you give us any behind the scenes gossip or facts?
It was a blast. It was extremely busy. It was extremely go, go, go. There was back-to-back rehearsals. And if there weren't back-to-back, then there was extra fittings, whether it was for the technical side, microphones, etc., or standing positions and that type of thing. And also, prior to the, well in advance of the competition itself, which was the 30th of April, 30 years ago, it was decided that I would do the main language, French, and that I would speak mainly in French rather than Gerry Ryan, because I could speak French, but I had to polish up on my French. And I spent a week in Paris, many weeks in advance of the actual final, the Grand Prix. And that was wonderful as well, that preparation. And there was also, actually, there was, I suppose, you could call it elocution lessons, but it wasn't quite elocution, but it was speaking presentation skills. And there were lessons in that regard for myself and for Jerry. Not too sure whether Jerry took much notice of them because he was so used to his 2FM program and running it the way he wanted to run it. And he was such a superstar and it was wonderful to get to present with him. But certainly I did the good girl on it and I went for all the lessons in French, both prior to my Paris visit and after my Paris visit, I went to all the speech lessons and essentially did everything that I was asked to do. And it was just a wonderful, exciting time because, remember, it was a huge show. I mean, there was thousands in the Point Depot that night, I think 3,000. There was 300 million around the globe, we were told, going to watch it. There were so many countries competing. And I suppose I hadn't experienced the excitement of the delegations coming. So the delegations, as you probably know better than anybody, are the performers from each country with all their producers and managers and all their teams. And so meeting all of those different groups and delegations was fascinating and exciting. And it was just so multicultural. And we were celebrating, obviously, the European Union as well. There was a strong emphasis on that, I recall, and our participation in the European Union, which is a bit ironic, I suppose, since I'm running to try and seek a seat in the European Parliament right now in my life, 30 years on. But there was a wonderful competition as well, I remember, amongst students of design for the actual logo that was going to be used on the television and then that was adopted into some other produce and merchandise around the Eurovision. And a wonderful logo was developed by a young student and it was a dark navy black sky with three castles in it and then stars, a constellation of stars bursting out against the castles, against the navy blue dark night sky. Simply stunning. So it moved away from any of the monochrome and it was much more artistic and flowing. And again, it was such a celebration of Ireland at that time. And it was really a moment in time that everybody, because of the huge success of it and Riverdance being born out of it, but it was a moment in time. Where were you on the night that Riverdance was first performed, 30th April 1994? And everybody remembers that. And everybody felt so proud to be Irish that night. And I, as I recall it, Lou and Connor, that pride went on for weeks, months, years. It was a game changer in terms of our national confidence and our national enjoyment of what we could do and how we performed so well and punched above our weight and could showcase such a wonderful show throughout the whole of Europe.
And you, obviously you talk about Riverdance there. When you were in rehearsals and watching it, did you get that feeling of this is something special?
Definitely. I remember the first time during the rehearsal that I heard the music of Bill Whelan. Again, I was familiar with Bill's fantastic music writing and I loved it. Timepiece, etc., all of those hits that he had had. But nothing could have prepared me for what I began to hear through An Una. Again, I was familiar with An Una, the choir. I'd been to several concerts and again had interviewed them for television programmes and featured them. So these were artists that I was familiar with in terms of their wonderful work. But when I heard the start of Bill Whelan's composition and the lone soprano voice, it was amazing. It definitely was missing a heartbeat time and stopping and the hairs beginning to stand on my head. But then it moved into these wonderful drums and then suddenly it moved into these other orchestrated pieces. And then suddenly we have dancers coming out in a beautiful, almost innocent, fairy-like dance between a man and a woman and the beautiful Jean Butler and Michael Flatley. And it was done so beautifully and gently. And then, as we know, it built up to a massive, massive crescendo. And obviously, after I heard the crescendo and all the dancers doing their dancing in a line, with the hard shoe on stage during the rehearsal, I was bowled over.
And of course, you know, Eurovision fans and Riverdance fans in general always look back on that iconic clip on YouTube, and you know, we hear yourself and Jerry, ladies and gentlemen, Riverdance.
Ladies and gentlemen, Riverdance.
So how does that feel to be part of an iconic moment in not only Eurovision history but also Irish history?
Absolutely brilliant. I will never forget it. Never forget saying it, although the clip does help to remind me of it. But I mean, that was obviously rehearsed and planned that we would say it together. But the more we had seen the rehearsals, myself and Jerry, the more we realised we were actually almost unleashing this phenomenal eagle that was going to soar high, not just above the roof of the Point Depot and above Ireland, but for the world. There was almost that feeling. So we kind of knew, but we didn't want to really dream it and believe it. But look what happened.
It's wonderful to hear the pride in your voice speaking about Riverdance. And we know that a lot of Irish people are indeed still very proud of Riverdance. And speaking of pride, it wouldn't be right for us to be chatting to you about Eurovision 1994 without mentioning, of course, Paul Harrington and Charlie McGettigan, who won the entire contest with their song Rock and Roll Kids, the third time in a row that Ireland won the Eurovision Song Contest, a feat that still has not been reached by any other country and probably won't be in the modern contest today. Can you tell us a bit about the atmosphere in the Point on that night as the points were coming out and Ireland was surging on top?
Yeah, it was amazing. We didn't know quite until quite late in the voting that it looked like Ireland was on course to get it. I fell in love with the song. Myself and John, now my husband, then my partner, we felt we were the rock and roll kids because we had met at 16 and here was I at 27 presenting the Eurovision. So the song really spoke to us and we got very close with the lads. Charlie and Paul, and obviously Brendan Graham, the writer, and their families. And we met them at obviously several functions before the Eurovision and indeed after. And we really regaled in the song and we really felt, you know, this is our song nearly forever, the Rock and Roll Kids, because it's so poignant and it's just such a simple song about, you know, boy meets girl and it's simple, innocent stuff. But yet, it's so poignant and it touched a nerve. So when we realised that obviously Ireland had won and Charlie and Paul were going to come back on the stage, the first person that approached me was Charlie. And all as I could do was throw open my arms and almost jump on him. And he picked me up. There was a wonderful couple of seconds. He picked me up and he whirled me around in the Barbie dress. And it sort of took off like Mary Poppins for about, you know, 2 seconds. And then obviously I got to embrace, at least I hope I did, Paul Harrington. And then they did the reprise. It was explosive. And after the program had finished, we stayed on the set for, it felt like hours, although they obviously it had to be cleared at a certain point in the night, but we stayed and we laughed and we cried and we hugged and we took loads of photographs, which I still have. And then we all went on to Lily's Bordello in town.
To party.
Exactly.
And of course, that's the immediate aftermath of Eurovision. But the months and years afterwards, how exactly has Eurovision shaped or affected your life since?
It's a defining moment. It's a wonderful, special, iconic defining moment that I will never forget and I'll never be allowed to forget it and I never want to forget it. And I revel in it. I celebrate it. I think about it and smile any chance that I get because it was a wonderful, happy moment, not just for me, but for the entire country and beyond. And it gave us, as I say, that boost, that confidence that sometimes we had lacked. you know, we saw a bit of it with Italia as well, when the Irish team suddenly got to a quarterfinal. It was a little bit like that, you know, the Italia World Cup. And we needed those moments at that time in Ireland, because we were punching above our weight in various things, but we really didn't want to acknowledge it or wear our confidence on our sleeve. And it gave us all that chance to say, do you know what? We are a great country, and come and live here and come and enjoy us. And what it did for tourism, obviously, was just wonderful. And for the arts. And as I say, for the national psyche and confidence. So, yeah, I will never forget it. And I love when people stop me and say, you were the girl, you were the woman. I remember. And it's funny, that's happening to me now on the streets as I canvass, or at events where I canvass. And obviously, it's only a certain age cohort. And presumably, we're talking about 45-year-olds upwards. But it's funny, even some of the youngsters that I canvass with, and when they flip over my canvas card and they see, oh, you're a vision. And it's still a great smiling, happy talking point for people. So the importance of Eurovision for Ireland can never be discounted. It can never be ignored, because it's simply huge. And I appreciate, Conor and Lou, that we haven't won in recent years, and it's taken a very downward turn for little old era Ireland, even though we've had wonderful performers going out and trying to get in there to the final night, the Grand Prix and so forth. But look, people still have really fond memories, and they still remember Johnny Logan because he won it, or wrote songs so many times that won it. Linda Martin obviously won it 2 years before I presented it. And that was with that wonderful song that Johnny wrote, Why Me? And then Niamh Kavanagh the following year with In Your Eyes, a stunning song. Brendan Graham, I think, again, wrote that. So these are songs that have obviously stood the test of time, and the youngsters do know them. Or if they don't know them, they kind of will say, oh yeah, my ma mentioned that, or my dad, or my older brother or something, my uncle. And yeah, it's a wonderful celebration. We should never forget it. It was a moment in time that was so important for Ireland.
We absolutely agree. And Cynthia, it's lovely to hear you speaking with such fondness and enthusiasm, because we know, you know, from looking you up, that you've had a really interesting life and career, from being a teacher to a broadcaster, working in the legal world, and now contesting in elections. So we want to wish you the best of luck with that. And on behalf of everyone, just to wish you on thaw more, agus gurb míle míle mahagut.
Oh, gurb míle mahagi, Bert, Lou, agus Conor, vi sé codas lauertliv, agus merci beaucoup à vous les deux. And I hope we can talk again about the Eurovision at some stage. And I hope that everybody enjoys the Eurovision this year.
Merci.
Merci. Gurb míle míle mahagut, Cynthia, for your time today. Eurovision. There we had Cynthia Niverku, an absolutely fascinating person. She was probably one of my favourite people, actually, we've ever interviewed. Yeah. I just thought she was so fascinating. She spoke with such passion and enthusiasm about her role in Eurovision 1994. What an interesting lady, like teacher to broadcaster to barrister to, you know, now a politician.
Yeah.
Like, wow. If anyone in her constituency is listening, have a look at her leaflet. I've no idea about her politics. I'm not endorsing her. But a wonderful person to speak to about Eurovision. And yeah, she was really kind to give us her time.
A nice human being.
Exactly.
That's it. But
exactly.
Fascinating chat. And I felt that we've only really scratched the surface with Cynthia. I would love to have her back on maybe in the future for a more deeper dive into Eurovision as well. But yeah, great person, and one of my favourite interviews probably that we've done.
And she sent us a lovely thank you email.
Yes.
Very kind.
Yes, thank you so much, Cynthia.
Very kind.
But we've talked about Riverdance, we've talked about the host, we talked about the general consensus of the contest and the premise of it. But we haven't talked about our winners.
Or the songs.
Or the songs in general. So before we talk the winners, chat to us about the songs, Lou, because you've got a few favourites of that year now. Me personally, I struggle with Eurovision, like in the olden days. That's a horrible thing to say, but like the old Eurovisions and stuff. But you appreciate it a bit more.
Well,
talk to us through.
I'm a 90s baby.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I always put this way. I'm just going to say, I've always been more mysterious about my age. I don't care anymore. I was born in 1995. And Ireland won Eurovision in 1992, 1993, 1994, and in 1996. So we didn't technically win in 1995. But Eurovision in Ireland got me, okay?
Or you can blame Lou for not winning it four times in a row.
I stole the thunder. You know what? Fionnuala was the violinist for Secret Garden and Nocturne, and she's Irish, so it's kind of fair, her win anyway.
Fair.
But yes, 1995, I was born, so I've technically only been alive for one Irish win, Emer Quinn. And when we met Emer Quinn in the concert hall, remember we told her, she was like, none of you were probably alive. And I was like, I was! I was a year old! She was like, that doesn't make it any better. So yes, I just missed the boat with 94. I had barely been thought of maybe at that point. And yeah, April 30th, 1994, I've rewatched this. Definitely at least once, I feel like twice, but we were chatting earlier, Connor, we were talking about some of the songs. ESC Radio seemed to love a lot of the 1994 songs. Some really interesting ones to point out here. So we had a few debuting. Lithuania, I believe, debuted and they came last, unfortunately. Quite a lot of, I would say, boring ballady songs.
Very true.
In the mix here. I commented to you when we were watching one or two songs together earlier. One thing I don't miss about older Eurovision contests, and that includes ones in the 2000s and the teens, is these like backing singers all in a row. It just looks so clunky on the stage. I'm glad we don't have as much of that anymore in the modern Eurovision contest. But the 94 stage was quite cool, actually.
Yeah, the city kind of background skyline.
Yeah, it was kind of like quirky. I liked the lighting.
The neon signs.
So, yeah, an interesting artist to note, and this always fascinates me. So musical theatre geeks, okay, come with me for this. Francis Ruffell from the United Kingdom, who sang Lonely Symphony, We Will Be Free. Really, really kind of interesting voice, a very distinctive voice. There's not many people out there who can sing like Francis. The song is okay. It came in 10th place, so not a bad result for the UK. But for the musical theatre geeks, you probably know already what I'm going to say. Frances actually was one of the originating stars of Les Miserables on the West End. So she played the role of Eponine, I believe. And if you listen to the original West End cast version of Les Miserables, she would be, you know, the original voice on My Own and a lot of these iconic musical theatre songs. And one thing I love about the original West End cast of Les Miserables is that not only has Frances featured in Eurovision, we've had Michael Ball, who, you know, represented the UK in the 90s also. We also had Colm Wilkinson playing the starring role of Jean Valjean, and he represented Ireland earlier on, decades earlier in Eurovision. So yeah, that's just a little kind of nerdy fact for my musical theatre geeks out there. Let's swindle back so I haven't lost just the Eurovision listeners. Some other great songs. I mean, we have to shout out Germany. Wir geben a party.
Third place, wasn't it? Wir
geben a party. Whoa, 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 whoa. If Eurovision was around then, I would not have been slating Germany. That's for sure. That's for sure. Three gals having a good time, bopping around, cute hats. The song was a bit, what would you say? It was camp and they leaned
very
into
90s. It. Very 90s.
Yeah, they leaned into it. I love that. I love that. I love the like handography. It's just so much fun. So much fun. Poland had their debut and they were the runner up of the year. And I still hear people in the fan community now saying, oh, Poland should have won. Poland should have won. I don't know if we agree with that. Absolutely but it is a beautiful entry and the Polish singers sang it beautifully. So well done to them. They still have not managed to outdo that result. Don't know if they will this year either.
No.
Based off that rehearsal at the weekend.
Poor gals everywhere in that rehearsal.
But alas, Connor, I've spoken enough. So I'm going to ask you, let's talk about what we really need to talk about here, which are the winners.
Yes.
Paul Harrington, Charlie McGettigan, the Rock and Roll Kids. Take us away. What are your thoughts?
Well, it is, in fact, both of our favourite Irish entry ever, funny enough. And it was actually a huge entry at the time in terms of the production of it, because it was very simple. It was two lads with a piano and a guitar, which was very different because, of course, we know the orchestra, no orchestra ever had won, you know, with a song had never won without the orchestra. And this was the first time that this had happened. Of course, Paul Harrington and Charlie McGettigan, more so Charlie, he had tried to go for Eurovision a few times during the National Song Contest, but it was this time. And we'll let them explain how they came together a bit later on. But this song won with 226 points, which at the time was a record for a Eurovision win. Of course,
Alexander Rybak expander. Of their time, the literally, Salvador of their time.
Literally, and it was, you know, a huge moment. Of course, the contest had expanded a lot, but still the highest points total at the time. And it actually wasn't beaten for a good few years after that either. So this was a huge moment, of course, written by Brendan Graham, who wrote the song. He also wrote The Voice by Emer Quinn as well, which won a few years later. He'd wrote other entries as well. 1976, Red Hurley's entry, and 1985, Wait Until the Weekend Comes. So he had Eurovision experience, but not a Eurovision win under his belt just yet until the Rock and Roll Kids rocked up onto that stage. They performed third on the night, which I didn't realise until today, which was so early in a final, which was very, very strange. But when you watch back on the voting, I think it's the fourth or fifth country that Ireland kind of began to take the lead and dominated a bit, which was, you know, at the time, very, very early on, because of course we know back in those days, they read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 and 12. They read all the points out on the scoreboard. So it was a long evening if you were not an Irish fan that night to hear Ireland keep getting 10s and 12s left, right and centre. But yeah, 226 points, which was a record at the time.
Can you imagine being in the three arena now, hosting Eurovision for the second time in a row and having our country win for the third time in a row? It blows my little mind.
And there's so many rumours out there about, oh, RTÉ didn't want this entry. They want to send this entry because it was, you know, they didn't want to win again and all that kind of stuff. That's been debunked now from the lads, you know, hearing this. They wanted the song themselves because they thought it was good. So, you know.
Brendan Graham himself, I saw him speaking at Eurovision, one of those Eurovision Legend concerts in the National Concert Hall back in 2019. And I wish I'd recorded this so I can remember what exactly he said. But it was something along the lines of that he submitted it in 92, it was a no. Submitted it in 93, it was a no. And then he got kind of called back for 94. So I don't know, did Brendan himself believe, you know, just kind of did he have the feeling that they didn't want the song and then they did? But I suppose we'll never know. I'm full of facts today. Another like fascinating fact about Brendan Graham, and I just had to search it there to make sure I was right. The classic Irish song, You Raise Me Up, was written by Brendan Graham and was first recorded by Secret Garden and Brian Kennedy.
Wow.
So huge Eurovision links going on with You Raise Me Up.
Wow.
Later recorded by Westlife.
Oh God.
I'm full of the facts today. The real nerdy part of me is coming. We go back to the 90s and Lou's like, yes, come on.
But sure, we've talked long enough anyway, but I think it is a great honour for myself and Lou to have these two lads on the podcast. Irish Eurovision legends, and we cannot wait for you to hear this interview with them. We recorded it last week before the anniversary, but it was certain that Paul and Charlie were delighted to be talking about it again 30 years on. Really kind to give us their time. And of course, let's get straight into it. This is our interview with Paul Harrington and Charlie McGettigan, aka the Rock and Roll Kids. Eurovision.
I remember 62. I was 16 and so were you. And we lived next door on the avenue. Jerry Lee was big and Elvis too. Blue jeans and blue suede shoes. And we never knew what life held in store. We just wanted to rock and roll forevermore. We were the rock and roll kids. Rock and roll was all we did. And listening to those songs on the radio. I was yours and you were mine. But that was once
upon a time. Now we never seem to rock and roll anymore.
Connor and I are very, very honoured to be joined by two Eurovision legends. They won the Eurovision Song Contest 30 years ago in 1994 with their iconic song, Rock and Roll Kids. Welcome to the podcast, Charlie McGettigan and Paul Harrington.
Lovely to be here. Lovely to be here. You know, it's only the second time I've spoken to Paul today, and we very rarely have that kind of two conversations in the one day, unless he owes me money or something like that, you know. And I send him demand notices.
I hate to bring this up about your memory, but it's actually the third time.
Right, no, you're dead right.
Should we add in the phone calls to get us all onto this call? It's probably about five or six times, actually.
You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a real honour to have you both here.
Thank you so much.
We have to say, both Connor and I, your song is our favourite Irish entry for Eurovision, and we love a lot of Eurovision songs.
You're very kind. Thank you for performing that beautiful song.
And
tell me, were either of you born?
I'm a 1995 baby, so I just missed the boat.
I'm 2000.
Oh, God, good luck.
I missed the glory years completely.
You're both post our song. That's great, actually. I kind of like that.
Funny, I listen to a lot of Beatles podcasts. I'm a Beatle fanatic, a Beatle nerd, if you like. And a lot of the people weren't even born, and they came to the Beatles 20 years, 30 years after we'd grown up with the Beatles. I grew up with the Beatles, you know. I remember 62. I was 16, and so were the Beatles.
No. When I get older, losing my hair many years from now, when I'm 64.
Yeah.
My dad's favorite song.
Yeah. I love that one too. Honey pie, you are driving me frantic. I'm in love, but it's hectic.
It's like a live concert. It's lovely. Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Be careful.
All my troubles seem so far away.
I got the guitar.
Now I believe in yesterday.
Yeah.
We love it. Right. But we're going to kick it off with our questions because we're having the crack. So talk us a bit through pre-Eurovision and how you guys came to Rock and Roll Kids and entering Eurosong. Because I know, Charlie, you had entered the Eurosong competition,
yes,
national final a few times before. How did you and Paul meet and bring Rock and Roll Kids to the Eurovision stage then?
Well, it was way too long ago, by the way. Neither of us can remember.
Well, funny, I knew Brendan Graham, as did Paul. Brendan Graham wrote Rock and Roll Kids, and he played the song for me 3 or 4 years before I think it actually qualified, and I did a demo of it, and it went something like this, and it went I believe in 62, I was 16, it's over you, and we lived next door. That was the kind of the way it was. Obviously a total disaster. And about a year later, he brought me a new version that he'd by a man called Paul Harrington. And it was just Paul on the piano. And I remember saying to Brendan, that is just exactly what should be done with that song. It reads nothing else, you know, just the piano. And he put it in. He put it in for the Eurovision. And believe it or not, it was rejected. And then he put it in the third year, the same version. And it qualified, and then he came to me and he said, I think it needs something. And I said, Brendan, don't be putting all the dancing girls and the smoke bombs and the usual paraphernalia that go with Eurovision. It just needs Paul and the piano and it'll work, you know. And he said, I just think it needs something else. And I said, what do you think it needs? You. Of course, I was kind of flabbergasted because, you know, I was moving house that year, moving jobs, a lot of stuff going on. And I said, give me 24 hours and I'll discuss it with my wife and see what she thinks. And we said, ah, feck it, we'll give it a go. And the rest is history. It says, Paul, you have lived with the song longer than I have.
No, but not evidently not, because I was going to say you heard it beforehand, but yeah, you must have heard it before me then.
Oh, I did. I heard it, but you've lived with the song. You know, you did the definitive version.
But look, my version of my story, not my version of your story, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It is, I suppose, I was, you know, a working musician. I'd gone back to kind of 1991 when I had my debut album called What I Say. I had a couple of hit records. In fact, my very first hit record in 1988, a long time ago. And I was astonished that I you know, listening to Larry Gogan mentioning my name on the chart and stuff. You know, those are the days when, you know, hearing your tune on the radio was a phenomenal, it was just incredible experience. But what I was probably doing the rounds at the time, having, you know, moderate to medium success. And as opposed to excess is what I do now. you know, Brendan kind of, I obviously got the attention of Brendan, and Brendan approached me to sing about five songs as a working musician, just to demo them in a studio and in Lombard studio. And I met with him and I said, yeah, sure, absolutely, love to do it. He said, look, I like the sound of your voice. I think you might be able to bring a certain something to these songs I've written. Anyway, I went through them fairly quickly, like a dose of salts, as the fella says. And I always say that to Brendan. I said, you know, some of them weren't great, but there was one gem in there. And I said, I at the end of the session, about an hour and a half, I said, Brendan, I think that's a beautiful thing there, whatever that is. And that was Rock and Roll Kids. So that was kind of the end of that. And I went on to pursue my own career endeavor. I think it might have been a year or 2 years later that he came back to me and said, he called me and said, look, by the way, you know, that's one of those songs you recorded for me. It's qualified for the National Song Contest. And I said, that's brilliant. I said, congratulations. Not knowing that he was saying, would you like to sing it? And I was kind of going, well, I wasn't sure. I really wasn't sure, because I was on my own road, on my own trajectory. I had my own plan. And to make a long story even longer, I remember driving into IMRO. If I'm not mistaken, I think Brendan was the chairman of IMRO at the time, or thereabouts. But I certainly had a meeting with him in there. And I was driving into IMRO with a friend of mine called Richard Speedy, who was my keyboard player at the time, and a great friend, to be honest, who I haven't seen in years. But however, I said to Richard, I said, I don't know how I'm going to tell this guy I don't want to do this. And he said, just tell him you don't want to do it. Just say no. He says, listen, I've made up my mind. I'm doing this. This is my pursuit, and the best of luck. And I'm sure you'll find somebody who will represent that song beautifully. I of course I had no idea that you and him were working it with the CIA and the and the Stasi and all the various spy networks, you know. you guys had a plan. But so I remember going into IMRO and I saw Brendan. I looked at him and I was telling him a firm no. And I saw him and I walked up to him, and he's a big, as anyone knows Brendan, he's a big guy, big bear, kind of cuddly bear. And he opened his arms out kind of wide and he looked at me and he said, well, with the big kind of fluffy eyebrows. And I said, sure, why not?
Par for the course.
When I think of that, I always think of a Marx Brothers film. If anyone ever remembers the Marx Brothers, and Groucho Marx in particular, excuse me, you know, where he was talking about something, I can't remember what the scene was, but he said, look, these are my principles, and I'm sticking to that. I'm sorry, I can't, you won't change me. But he said, if you don't like my principles, he said, I've got a whole new set of them over here. I hope you've got a good editor for this podcast. five hours later.
I love how you both have different stories there, but both of them kind of end up with the same Irish. Asher, why not?
Yeah, that's kind of yeah.
The only thing I will say to you both is, as you advance through this podcast, you will realize that myself and Charlie won't be going on Mr. and Mrs. anytime soon.
Mr. and Mr. these days.
Because you can put the headphones on and spin us, and then every story changes.
Well, that's funny. That's what I find, Paul, down the years. And we've met up, and I'll say something. Do you remember when such and such a thing happened? And you'll say, no, that never happened. You know, and I begin to wonder, did I make it up? You know, because you were asked so many questions. You were asked the same thing so many times, and you got bored listening to the same answer, so you made up on a different.
That's true. We started. We were lined up in Europe like a pair of Eurovision hookers, really, and for the European press in loads of different locations, and we literally were like, we only got to do this once or twice or a couple of times. I can only imagine. That's why I have great empathy for actors and who are when they have to do the rounds to promote a movie, and they're sitting there and the press are coming in and out and they're asking the same stupid questions all the time, and they just keep smiling and answering. Yeah, well, actually, funny that you should ask that, even though somebody asked me that about 500 times.
And there's
a great magnanimity about that. And of course, we were drawing in that, but there. As you said, Charlie, at one point the two of us just said, okay, what are we going to say this time?
Do you remember we were in Norway, and there was some huge amount of radio stations in Norway, and we spent 3 days, one after the other.
There was more radio stations than people.
Yeah. And you remember we were literally doing these things from about 10 in the morning till 5 in the evening for 3 days. And you know, it's inevitable that you get so bored, you'll say anything just to get rid of them.
I'll never forget Norway. I nearly froze to death kind of trying to go out and get a cigar.
I actually got lost in Norway. We came from a TV station to the hotel, and there was a bit of a reception. And I got a bit bored and I said, I'll go for a walk. And I went off for a walk and suddenly I found I was lost. I didn't know the name of the hotel we were in. I was in a strange city. It was freezing cold. I was just in my suit jacket and stuff like that. And I eventually had to stop a police car passing. And they brought me into the station and they rang up all the hotels in Norway saying, Charlie McGettigan and Paul Harrington booked into this. Eventually, I got back after 3 hours. Of course, you were plastered at that stage. You didn't even know I was gone.
Jesus, lads, you're a fierce, great crack.
And what a coincidence. I'm semi-plastered again.
I'm going to interject you two with another question.
Let's keep going.
We are
keep interjecting, or we'll be here all night.
This thoroughly. Speaking of questions, you've probably been asked 100 times over. You did the hat trick for Ireland in 1994. Mm. We obviously had, Linda winning in 1992 and Niamh winning in 1993. How did you feel sitting in that green room in the Point in Dublin? Hat trick for Ireland. What was the atmosphere around you, Charlie, when you knew that the points were coming in and Ireland was winning yet again?
Well, we were watching it and, with about 3 countries to go, people were telling us, you can't be beaten now, And I had the guitar over in the corner and I said, get ready to go on. I said, no, until I hear the final vote, I'm not touching that guitar because I can just see me getting the guitar ready to go. And the winners are Poland, So for that reason, I couldn't believe my ears. I just could not believe that we were actually after winning. I don't know about you, Paul, but, I was totally flabbergasted, to say the least.
Look, of course, it's funny. We're coming up to the 30th anniversary, and we're going to be doing a couple of things over the coming weeks to mark that and celebrate it. But like, it's almost like I almost need to go back and look at the video to kind of recall what happened. The green room stuff, you, me, Anita Notaro, God rest her. Shea Healy, you know, gone as well. And you know, I'm not, I want to remember those people as well, because they were part of our whole lives at that time.
Yes.
Our whole life, our whole universe kind of was collapsed into a week. One week, you know.
Yeah.
Staying in a hotel, being monitored and chaperoned, should I say, not monitored, chaperoned and rehearsing and turning up in the Point Theater and in the Point Village for our rehearsal spot, and just being taken care of and being pressed and being interviewed and talking to everybody coming up to this big event. You know, there was minimal talk, you know, there was all the usual talk about the, you know, oh God, there's no chance we'll ever win, you know, win three in a row and stuff like that, because and the same old stuff, you know, people talk about misinformation and fake news nowadays. I mean, Christ, that's been around since time began, you know. Like, I always remember people saying, you know, ORT can't afford to host this again, so you're definitely never going to win it, you know. We did the undoable. And that was pretty phenomenal. And, yeah. You know, we decided to, between us, we agreed, let's just do what we do. Because we were both kind of two solo artists being brought together by Brendan Graham. Charlie, being, you know, already I knew of him from, you know, I'd seen Charlie in a band called Jargon, who are now reconstituted. I saw them opening up a great show for Chris Rea in the Point Theater, and I was fascinated with I said, Jesus, there's a man with a beautiful, beautiful voice. He sang a song called Ballyburra, which is like it's I don't know, it's like, you know, if you look at that ad for Lindor chocolate, you know,
that's what you want to say now.
That was Charlie's voice coming out of the PA, and I said, oh my God, this is a beautiful thing. I always remember that Ballyburra. Land of my childhood dreams, and it was the sweetest thing I'd ever heard. And I didn't know who the hell he was, but to the fact that it was a year or two or a couple of years later that I wound up, when Brendan said to me, he said, how do you feel about somebody playing guitar with you on the this is when the song got through. I said, yeah. And I said, look, I've got a guy in mind, Bill Shanley, terrific guy, friend of mine. Yeah, that'll work, right? And he said. What do you think about Charlie McGettigan? And I said, oh, him from Jargon. Oh, yeah. I said, then that sounds good. Now, I'm probably not even answering your question. I probably, you know, but, you know, you've asked the question of memories. I mean, memories are all just little things that they're all just little pods of things that come into your mind. And, you know, memories are no good for me if I can't connect them to an emotion. And that was the feeling. That was the emotional feeling I felt when Charlie was going to be involved. And then when we sang it together and when we sing it together today, the same magic exists. The exact same pure magic exists. And it comes alive.
The songs were all being done on Kenny Live on a Saturday night television program, and we met in either Lombard, I think it was Lombard Studios, in the afternoon of the Saturday. And that was the first time we met, and we literally rehearsed for I'd say 20 minutes, and the song was there. Song was straight away there, and we went out and sang it that night. You know.
We ran through it. I remember it well, the recording of it. You know, it was you, me, Anto Drennan, Bill Shanley, Nullick Bridgman, who, God rest him, was gone, played the drums. And I remember saying to Noel Bridgman, I said, the vibe, because he looked at me quietly, and I said, the vibe on this is James Taylor's Fire and Rain. And and he just said, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
You and I ran through it, and you know,
here's an interesting
the recording to this day, 30 years later. I mean, last year I was over in Liverpool. I went over to meet my son. He lives in London, and we went to the Eurovision. And I was doing an interview. We'd done a previous interview with Dermot O'Leary on BBC Radio 2. But anyway, he asked me to do something, just a quick phoner while I was over there. And he played Rockin' Roll Kids, and I just listened to it, you know, on BBC Radio 2, and he said, that recording sounds amazing, you know, immense. It's just a beautiful recording.
Do you remember the night on the Kenny Live, just before we were doing a rehearsal, the Maynooth Chamber Choir?
Oh, yeah, on. Yeah.
I was sitting there, in, you know, quaking in my boots, saying, we've got to go on after these guys, the Maynooth Chamber Choir. And they were absolutely brilliant. But last year, at a music festival here in Drumshambo, a traditional music festival, this lady came up to me and she said, I met you before. And she said, well, I said, yeah, when was that? She said, do you remember the night you were on the Late Late Show or on the Pat Kenny Live? Do you remember the chamber choir? I said, will I ever forget? They were just beautiful. And do you know who that woman was?
Catherine.
The Minister for Arts, Culture and the Gaeltacht, Catherine Martin. Right. Was wow. in the choir that night, you know, and what a moment that she actually remembered, you know, and she, you know, a lot of people that heard that particular night that's the winner, you know, we didn't, but they did, because you know we're in a world of disappointments normally, you know, you get, you know, it's an awful lot of rejections and things don't happen, but we never, I certainly didn't think we had any chance of winning, you know, two old boogers with beards, you know, singing a.
I don't know. I kind of thought we were either going to win it outright or lose it outright. You know, that's kind of where, you know, we were doing our thing, and the sound was lovely, the blend was lovely. And we said, look, you know, I was kind of really thinking, look, well, if this was a winner, I'd throw my hat at it in some way, but it didn't matter. I was equally able to accept that if it didn't win. You know, but the truth of the matter is, it's Eurovision Song Contest, the longest running soap opera in the history of television, and you know, win, lose or draw, the circus tent comes down.
It hasn't come down, Paul, because you know, you and I still have the opportunity to sing this song. You know, whether it be 5 or 6 times a year, we get to sing it together, and either on telly or on concerts and stuff like that. And the magic, as you said, is still there. You know, it's still an enjoyable experience each time we do it. And each time, I don't think we've ever, ever sung it the same way twice or played it the same way twice.
Never. Yeah. Never.
That's the magic of it, though, I guess. The magic
it's
moment
a
of it.
Song, really, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it was quite a different winner at the time because it was the first winning song that didn't have any orchestra behind it. It was very simple, the piano and the guitar. And as well, it was the biggest winner in points at that time.
Up till then.
So it just showed you how it resonated with the whole of Europe at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
226,
I think it was.
Yeah. 226. Yeah. Bang on.
Yeah. As you say, 30 years on, timeless song. Do you still love singing it? How does it feel when you perform it now?
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, I mean, the truth of the matter is, you know, Charlie and I perform it independently of each other, because you know we haven't been a double act for 30 years. We come together for this and we come together for some shows, you know, in various how shall I say, we in the last 10 years I said it was kind of a revival of the song, where both Charlie and I were doing some kind of concerts and stuff like that, which was lovely, because again, it's a very eclectic thing, because we're different, we do very different things together, but we get together like two chefs in a way, you know. You know, and you know, it's you know, I'm Marco Pierre White, and he's Monica Sheridan.
You know, they won't even know who Monica Sheridan is. She's one of the first TV chefs would have all on RTE way back in the black and white days, and she had a great way of presenting. As long as it was Irish stew or bacon and cabbage or whatever it was.
Totally unhygienic and everything, just dipping in and licking her fingers.
Oh, yes.
Obviously, before we talk about your winning moment, we got to talk about the interval act, which was, of course, Riverdance. And that.
What? I never heard of it.
Yeah, it's a weird little thing, isn't it, that no one's heard of it? But, of course, Riverdance is huge interval acts that shocked Europe, and still to this day, you know, it's huge around the world, touring Europe and, you know, every continent, really. But in that moment, sitting in the green room, did you guys get to catch it as much as the audience did? And what was your first initial reaction to it?
My reaction was the same as yours. It was stunning. You know, it was absolutely stunning. I mean, we were up on our feet the same way the audience were, you know, so it was incredible.
You remember the green room, what should have been happening in the green room, and when you ever look at it, you know, the little huddles of delegations, and they're all counting the possible votes, and they're wondering what's going to happen. And suddenly there was a novel idea at the time. There was a huge big screen in the green room, and this came on, and everything stopped. Everybody just jaws dropped, and just a complete stunning silence when this was on. And then the end, of course. But that was an unheard of thing to happen. The interval act was usually when people went off and made their tea and made a cup of tea and stuff like that. You know, and
But you're right. You're absolutely right, because most of the radio stations around Europe would take a break.
Yeah.
And that's where there was all these spikes in on you know, electricity grids, because people were putting on kettles all over Europe because they did kind of their individual thing. And that was one of the most, I think, you know, the most watched interval.
But, you know, talking about Riverdance and Bill Whelan, Bill Whelan had an interval act several years before that called the Seville Sweep. You remember that?
Yeah. I remember it was a thing called Time Dance.
Time Dance, yeah. Well, where did they get the Seville Sweep? Where did that come out of?
I think in between. And I think, well, look, you know, it's easy for us to say it was an amalgamation, but what it was it was an evolution, and it was something coming to fruition at the right time. In other words, and he knows that. It's like anything in anyone's lifetime, you know, where the planets align. And the fact that, you know, what something I've always learned over the years is that, you know, opportunities come and go. The most important lesson you learn as you move through your life is to be ready for the opportunities when they come. The foundations had been laid, the Riverdance, and this was the whole thing aligned beautifully. I know this absolutely fabulous, still is. And, you know, the only thing is this something very weird has happened to their timeline. They keep celebrating the 25th anniversary of Riverdance, but it's kind of like it's actually 29 or something like that. They readjusted the time, you know. I was talking to Tom McGoggin about this. I said, oh, with COVID, he said we had to kind of, we went back to the 25, you know. I said, man. But I said, you know, because don't forget, it's 30 years since it was born. Yeah. And it didn't really happen until
the next year, the following year.
You touch on it there with the Riverdance and how it became and has become a worldwide phenomenon, touring continents, selling out shows all around the world. Yourselves, though, Rock and Roll Kids, your win, post-Eurovision, what was it like to take it in as, you know, the winners of this huge European competition? And really, how has Rock and Roll Kids continue to live on to this day?
In my own opinion, the song has lived on. And I, when Paul and myself sing it, at one point we stop and said, you sing it, the audience, and they sing it on their own. They know all the words and stuff. It's a timeless song, even though one thing that I always see, it's a very sad song, because it's about lost youth, and your youth is gone, and you wish you were back like a rock and roll kid again. And you know, it's two people talking to one another and saying, you know, that was when we really were a vital thing. Now, where have we gone? We're not rock and roll kids anymore. You know, the kids don't even talk to us. So it's quite a sad song. But then again, so is The Fields of Athen Ryan. It was sung with great gusto in rugby matches and football matches all over the world. And it's the saddest song you could sing. The poor man is getting sent off to Van Diemen's land, you know. So what do they say about Ireland? All our wars are happy. All our songs are sad. You know, so it's a touch of that in it.
It's a hugely nostalgic song. And as I always say, whoever said nostalgia was just a thing of the past. And it has that retrospective thing, retro thinking. And it's about communication. You know, it's about couple. where they've reached a point in the relationship where it's all picture and no sound. And now, sadly, we are, as a society, as a global society, we have been subsumed, consumed by technology, all about communication. And the biggest, single, most powerful communicative thing in the world is music.
And I think that's a perfect way to end it. We've ran out of time, I'm afraid. But Paul Harrington, Charlie McGettigan, thank you so, so much for joining us on the Eurovision podcast.
Thanks.
And happy anniversary.
So we might run into you. We might run into you down the road somewhere.
Absolutely.
And thanks for having us.
Pleasure. Talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Eurovision. So there we have it. Connor and I in discussion with Paul Harrington and Charlie McGettigan. I mean, this is an audio podcast, so I don't know how much everybody will have picked up on, but it was good crack, to say the least. Those two can talk.
Even before we hit the recording button,
we had to interject to be like, we're recording now.
Yeah. But even so trying to get the call good to stuff. Go, you know, the technical difficulties, yeah. The banter that was going on, it was gas, the slagging left, right and centre, but it was good crack.
At times it was like a conversation with Paul and Charlie featuring Connor and yeah. Lou. But it was good fun. We really enjoyed it. Crack, and thank you to both of them for their time.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Eurovision legends. Rock and Roll Kids is just such a timeless song. It's just so, so beautiful. It's what Ireland does really, really well. There's been lovely versions of that song since. I don't know if you remember, there was a beautiful cover on The Late Late Show performed by Ryan O'Shaughnessy, mm-hmm. and was it Ruth Ann and somebody else, lovely harmonies. And it's still a song a lot of us younger Irish Eurovision fans love. I would love to know what the general consensus on it is, because I always see it getting rated lower as an Irish winner compared to like Niamh Kavanagh or Johnny, you know, even Linda and Emer sometimes get more flowers, I feel sometimes.
Probably because it's just very simple. It's a very simple yeah. song, like we were saying earlier, you know, two guys singing with a piano and a guitar. As like Irish people, it's very, we're used to that, seeing that a lot. You know, we love that. Yeah. We appreciate that sort of music. Some people might just like the bigger ballads, the more dramatic songs, the big finishes with the big vocal moments. Rock and Roll Kids is the opposite of that. It's just plain and simple. And that's why it works.
No doubt.
That's probably why it worked back then. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And you know what this to me is kind of like retribution for? He's at the end of every podcast episode we do.
Mm.
I think Somewhere in Europe was robbed
yeah.
in 1990. I think we should have won. We came, what, joint second?
Yeah.
I think we should have won Eurovision 1990 with Somewhere in Europe. That song is such a classic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of in that realm of Rock and Roll Kids, the way it was performed and the instrumentation and everything. So yeah, it's nearly like a brother to Somewhere in Europe, this song, which I think is very close to our hearts on the Eurovision yeah. podcast.
Definitely. And it's yeah. Funny enough as well, you know, how Eurovision lives on, and both Paul and Charlie have tried to go to Eurovision yeah. in different ways before. You know, in 2015, Charlie actually wrote, it was Cat Mahon with Anybody Got a Shoulder, which finished second in Eurosong. And then, of course, a big favourite of yours, Amy, in 2013 with Crashing Down. Paul was the piano player on the night as well. That finished second.
She was robbed. I'm still not over it. I'm so, 18-year-old me was like, what is going on? Why has she not won? And look at her now. She's off doing amazing things. We yeah. missed such a trick. No disrespect to Ryan Dolan, because he seems like a really lovely person. He was my mortal enemy for a good 10 years, because I was just like,
no.
How did Only Love Survives go to, where was it, Malmö? I was so mad. I was like, we should have sent Amy. But anyway, that's a conversation for another podcast.
But Amy, you're more than welcome to come back. You yeah. know, we see you're a pop diva nowadays. So, uh-huh. you know, come back with a banger and we'll...
Guys, get her on the socials.
Happy. Yeah, tag
Tell her when the submissions open in the summer. Yeah, yeah. But it's amazing to have had Paul and Charlie on. I feel like for us, you know, running this podcast and interacting with all of you, one of the biggest honours for us is to have any Irish act on, particularly a winning
mm-hmm.
act, you know, and we've been fortunate enough to have Niamh on, and we've been fortunate to meet like Emer Quinn and Linda out and about, and, you know, to manage to make people's schedules work, to have them on, to speak to them about their win is just priceless.
If it wasn't for Eurovision, I would never have been poked by Linda Martin, a Eurovision winner.
Yeah.
In Liverpool last year. You know, it's crazy. But but lads, we need to get Linda on next. Like, that's the next thing. Come on, tag her now because she's being difficult with us. No,
I think we've agreed. I think we've agreed. The day I meet Linda Martin, the day will end. Because
And Dustin.
She is my hero. And Dustin.
Those are two people.
And I came close to meeting both of them and I didn't. And
I've met both of them like... And you haven't. It's crazy how like...
But I think the universe doesn't want me to meet them. Honestly. Because
the world will
you
end.
Know I won't shut up about it. Either I won't shut up or like something will happen and like the hero status will be ruined, which I don't want to happen.
I don't think it will. Linda's iconic and Dustin's is just Dustin, so...
See, I would ask Linda to sing Terminal 3 with me. And I don't know if she'll appreciate that or not. I don't know, because she's more known for Why Me. I love Terminal 3 so much.
Well, we'll have to get her on to ask her these questions. If you tag her, lads, and tell her to come on the podcast.
Linda for Eurovision.
We're waiting there with the mic,
lads. Tell her Diva, Paul and Charlie have done it, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Then she'll be wanting to do it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, the invite is obviously there. But look, lads.
30 years.
It's crazy
Eurovision
when you think about it. You know, it's
30
probably,
years young.
Even for, you know, Cynthia talking to her and obviously Paul and Charlie. It still probably feels like only yesterday for them, which is crazy to see. And each of them talked about their love and affection for Eurovision
what
as
a
whole
thing.
And what a special moment. And
only down the road in the point.
It's crazy. Yeah. Only down the road.
On the River Liffey.
Sure. That is everything for the moment, really, with this 30th anniversary. It was important to mark it and take a break from Eurovision 2024 and go back 30 years and celebrate a huge contest, which, of course, took place in Ireland, in our hometown of Dublin. Like we said, only up the road, and it was important to mark it. So happy anniversary to Paul and Charlie on their win. Happy 30th anniversary to the first ever performance of Riverdance.
Woo!
And of course, 30 year anniversary to Cynthia Nemiroku and of course, the late Jerry Ryan for hosting Eurovision 1994. Now, guys, we have been supported by you so much over the last few weeks. We've been busy with our quick fires, but it's important to take a moment now to go through our Buy Me a Coffees because we've had so many of them. We really do need to catch up.
All right, so we'll kick it off with Jamie supporting us saying, I'm your new big fan, honorary Irish man by name, only from London, living near Dover. Loved the podcast. I will be in Albania for the semis, interestingly. Was at London Eurovision party and met Connor. Do have a drink on me at finals, Connor. Connor,
you,
enjoy
Jamie.
Your drink on behalf of Jamie. Rachel Devlin, a.k.a. your number one fan. Ray, Ray. Connor's,
Rara. I couldn't say Rachel as a kid, so I had to call her Rara.
Oh,
so that's
sorry.
Why she said that there.
Oh,
then.
Sorry. That's really cute. So Connor's sister, would you like to read it out?
I'll read this out now, Rachel. Thank you so much. She bought us 6 coffees, which is a lot for her. I know she's a bit stuck for money at the moment. So thank you, Rachel.
What a guy.
Big congratulations to the whole gang at the Eurovision podcast. You guys once again have smashed it. I'm loving the quick fire rating. So happy they're back. The legendary Alex Basmati absolutely killed it at the London pre-party. Thanks for all the amazing episodes throughout the year. I hope no matter how you celebrate / watch Eurovision this year, you enjoy a few baby Guinness to celebrate the pod success. Bring on May. # crown the witch. Thank you, Rachel. Love you.
I might read the next one if that's okay.
Do you? Absolutely.
Laura said, loving this season's episodes, particularly the episode Osgoelia and what shiv. Gerf Malgut, Laura, that means a lot.
That episode got a lot of love, which I was appreciating.
That made me,
you know, I loved that.
We've done so many good things, like so many things I'm proud of. And that is one of, I'm going to start crying if I talk about it. I'm so happy that we did it. Laura also says, suggesting a live episode from the bypass for the semis. # crown the witch. # come to Cork. She's talking about the McCream bypass. How iconic.
That'd be funny.
Iconic would that be?
I wish we'd done this sooner, but it would be funny to go down and get like a photo by the bypass and be like, crown the witch. With like a big flag or something.
The week is still young, mate.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Lee. Imagine we're driving to Cork road trip.
We have one or two pals. Connor, S.
Yeah,
lives in McCroom.
Yeah.
We could definitely
if someone
visit.
Could do it for us now. We'll appreciate this. Carolyn also got in touch and supported us. She said, thank you for this season's podcast. I'm from the UK. Your podcasts are the best Eurovision ones I've listened to. Keep up the good work. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Thank you for listening.
Owen says, well done on all the content recently. You both are amazing. Thank you, Owen, very, very much. It's a team effort here, the Eurovision podcast.
Stephen Lynch also supported us. Thanks for keeping us truly entertained every day with the Quickfire episode. It was clearly a massive effort on your parts and I've loved having a daily dose of Eurovision chat to wake up to every morning. Yeah. Can't wait to see how it all changes once we see the rehearsals.
I love the Quickfires too.
Yeah.
I love that people enjoy it as much as we do. It means a lot.
It really makes it when, you know, listeners get in touch and get involved as well.
That's
really
all about,
important.
Isn't it? Everybody everybody's voices involved. Jen says, have loved the quickfire and this whole season. Well done and roll on, semi-final one. Thank you, Jen.
Our friend Tommy Corbett has got in touch. Thanks for the entertainment this season. You are appreciated more than you know. See you in Malmo. See you soon, Tommy. Thank you for your support as always. We'll have to have Tommy back on soon.
Love Tommy.
Enough. We love Tommy. What so much time for him.
Tom Woodhouse, lots of support from him. Thank you. Saying thank you for all your hard work this Eurovision season. The Quickfire episodes have been great. Thank you so, so much, Tom, and everybody who has supported us on our Buy Me a Coffee. It means more than you know. I mean, look, we are doing this in our spare time. It's not a job for us. You know, there's equipment, there's studios to be booked. Sometimes there's flights to be booked. There's merchandise to be bought, equipment to be replaced, and so on, so on, so on. So every little bit means a lot, as most importantly, do your messages of support and the fact that you listen to us, because otherwise we'd just be speaking into the void.
Talking shite to no one.
Well, that's kind of how the podcast was born, because we were sitting in an establishment, eating or drinking.
We were out for the night, lads, having a few chats.
We were in our local. Yeah, we were in our local. In the summertime. Very close, if you didn't hear that 100 times already. We were in our local. Shout out to
you. Live near
local.
Me, do you? Never knew what? That.
Well, one Eurovision song to drive, three to walk. Hey! But yes, the podcast was born out of a bit of shy talk over a pint or whatever. And here we are. And lots of you listen, lots of you get in touch, and we love it. There's going to be a little bit more to come pre and during Malmö. Like, at this point on the day of release, Connor, you're heading off in a matter of days, as is Alex.
Yes.
I am getting ready to do all my online coverage all week at home, and we're going to keep those socials topped up. Follow us everywhere.
You'll be
everywhere.
Sick of us. You'll be
put
sick
on notifications, because we're going to be going live. You don't want to miss a thing.
But yeah, Lou, as you said, like, it's going to be a busy, busy few weeks ahead. Pre-Eurovision, post-Eurovision, during Eurovision. So you will be sick of us by the end of it. But of course, stay in contact. Keep sending us your messages on what you think of Eurovision 2024 and Eurovision years gone by, as we talked about today. Get in contact with us on Instagram at Eurovision Podcast. TikTok is Eurovision Podcast. We're going there live a few times as well. We're on Twitter, X, whatever you call it nowadays, Eurovision Pod. Email us, eurovisionpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, if you want to support us and help us out a bit, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/Eurovision Podcast. Or if you want to keep it simple, just go over to our link tree, all of our links there. And of course, wherever you're listening to this, whether it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, wherever it is, please leave us a review and rate us so other Eurovision fans from Ireland and abroad can find us and listen in and join the crack. Woo! As well. But again, thank you so, so much to every single one of you who has supported us over the last few weeks and months. And it's nearly time to crown another Eurovision winner. But from myself and Lou today, thank you so much for listening, as always. But all we got to say is,
Slán go fóill. As we bid adieu, goodbye, agus slán, we leave you once again with the winning song of this year's Eurovision Song Contest, Íhua, A Winter na Hárapa.
I was yours and you were mine. That was once upon a time. Now we never seem to rock and roll. We just never seem to rock and roll. Yeah.